Okay, well, thank you for the opportunity to speak here this morning. With it now being almost a year since the FX Global Code was launched, today I'll provide an update on the progress toward its adoption within the industry. I'll also talk a little about the body responsible for maintaining the code, the Global Foreign Exchange Committee, or GFXC, and how Australia fits into that and what sort of issues the GFXC has been focusing on. I should know that at the start that any views I express today are my own and not necessarily those of the GFXC or of the Reserve Bank. Now, while I'm sure that many of you are by now familiar with the FX Global Code, it's worthwhile briefly reviewing its background. The code was put together over 2 years, culminating in its publication last May. Drafting the code was a collaborative process between the private and public sectors globally, with central banks representing the public sector. Guy DeBell, now the Deputy Governor of the RBA, chaired the process. The code is designed to apply to all wholesale market activity, so it was important that a diverse range of private sector participants were directly involved in its composition, and this included both buy and sell side participants from the Australian market. Additionally, throughout the drafting process, the broader membership of the Australian Foreign Exchange Committee also had input, and it is this committee, the AFXC, that ultimately endorsed the code for use in the Australian wholesale market. So the AFXC is sponsored by the Reserve Bank and has existed for many years as the forum through which local industry participants can come together to discuss topical issues in the FX market and agree on conventions. Our members are drawn from a wide range of market participants, and in recent years we've sought to increase that diversity by bringing in more asset managers and others from the buy side. Similar committees have been sponsored by central banks in other jurisdictions for the same purposes. And central banks have always viewed these committees as playing an important role in advancing market standards. However, while these committees had endorsed codes of best practice for their respective FX markets in the past, they weren't identical. In contrast, the Global Code has now been endorsed by the Foreign Exchange Committees of all the major currency markets, replacing each of the old local codes. And the committees from the 16 largest centres, including the AFXC, have also come together to create the Global Foreign Exchange Committee. So the principal task of the GFXC is to maintain the Global Code and promote its adoption within the industry. And with FX committees from other smaller regions also looking to associate with the GFXC, the reach of the Global Code will continue to expand. It's important to remember that the FX Global Code isn't a piece of regulation and doesn't by itself replace any existing legal or regulatory requirements imposed on market participants. As a voluntary standard, the code is simply intended to provide a set of guidelines on what good practice looks like. Nevertheless, ASIC have encouraged market participants in Australia to adhere to the standards set out in the code. But how confident can we be that market participants globally will adopt the code and that it will be effective in promoting good practices? Well, based on what we've seen so far, I think there are good reasons to be optimistic about the code's success. First, there's the content of the code itself. Having a code whose text is informed by the broad spectrum of participants in the market and is responsive to changes in that market gives it a great deal of legitimacy as an industry standard. Second, we know that awareness of the code is now widespread throughout the industry. Late last year, the GFXC coordinated a global survey of market participants to gauge awareness, and the results of that survey were encouraging. Most respondents to the survey said they had a degree of familiarity with the code, and the vast majority thought that the code would improve behaviours and market practices. With this awareness comes increasing expectations from clients and counterparts. They want to be sure that the entities they engage with are adhering to the principles of the code. So, recognising these expectations, the GFXC has appended a short statement of commitment to the code. Market participants can use this statement to publicise their intention to adhere to the code's principles. Simply put, the statement says that the signing institution has reviewed the code and has taken steps to align its practices with the principles of the code. And over the past year, a number of public registers have been created to record these statements of commitment. For example, in the local market, the ACI and the Australian Financial Markets Association have jointly created an online register. Other registers exist elsewhere in the world, and the GFXC will soon put an index of all these registers on its own website. This will include a feature that allows users to search across the registers to check which institutions have signed up to the code. At the moment, the public registers indicate that there are over 150 institutions globally that have signed statements of commitment. This number is increasing all the time and is likely to grow rapidly in the next month or so. And this is because when the code was launched last May, it was recognised that a period of transition might be necessary for participants to align their practices with the code, or at least review their practices to confirm that they were aligned. Consequently, when the regional FXCs, including the AFXE, made membership of their committees conditional on the signing of a statement of commitment, members were generally given about 12 months to sign. So that transition period will soon be coming to an end. Looking over the list of firms that have signed statements of commitment confirms both the global scope of the code and the breadth of its application in the wholesale market. Not only have the large global banks signed up, smaller sell-side banks and other liquidity providers have done so as well, and suppliers of key market infrastructure such as execution and settlement platforms have also signed. While it's true that fewer buy-side firms in the private sector have signed, many have done so, including asset managers. In this regard, it's always been recognised that the steps market participants will need to take to align their practices with the code will depend on the nature of their FX activities. Some of the principles of the code may not be relevant for a lot of buy-side firms. However, there are many principles that do provide direct guidance to the buy-side. For example, giving consideration to the potential impact of their orders on market conditions, what sort of market colour clients should and should not expect to get from dealers, the appropriate transparency dealers should be providing on their execution practices, and the need for clients to regularly evaluate the execution they get from dealers. So for those of you who are participating in the wholesale FX market, via whatever means, I would encourage you to sign a statement of commitment. Ultimately, the success of the code will be to everyone's benefit, so it's important that we all support it where we can. At the very least, you should be familiarising yourself with the code and using it as a means of holding to account those with which you engage in the market. If your counterparts and service providers haven't sent you a signed statement of commitment or lodged one on a public register, you should be asking them why they haven't. In the GFXC survey of market participants that I mentioned earlier, a majority of respondents said they were planning to curtail or even cease trading with firms that don't sign a statement of commitment. For its part, the Reserve Bank of Australia has committed to adhering to the global code when conducting its activities in the FX market. A statement of commitment signed on behalf of the bank has been lodged on the ACI's and AFMA's public register. Furthermore, we've told each member of our counterparty panel that our trading relationship with them will cease at the end of this month unless they have provided us with a signed statement of commitment. And globally, other central banks are taking the same approach. Now, going forward, as the market continues to evolve, it'll be important to ensure that the guidance provided by the code remains relevant. To do this, the GFXC is committed to undertaking a comprehensive review of the code at least once every 3 years. In between times, of course, specific issues may arise that warrant revisions to particular parts of the code, and in considering these issues, the GFXC may decide it needs to consult with market participants. So the first such consultation occurred last year when the GFXC sought public feedback on last look practices in the FX market. As you're all doubtless aware by now, last look refers to a price maker having a final opportunity to accept or reject a trade request made on its quoted price. In Principle 17, the Code had already set our guidance on what last look was and how it could be used fairly as a mechanism to control risk. A key part of that guidance was ensuring that there was sufficient transparency from price makers about what they were doing. There'll no doubt always be differing opinions on the merits of last look. However, there was one aspect of the practice that generated particularly intense debate when the code was being drafted. And this was whether it was legitimate for a price maker to undertake hedging or other trading activity during the last look window. That is, whether the price maker could transact in the market in response to the client's trade request before they have decided whether to accept or reject that request. The concern was that if the client's request was ultimately rejected, information about their intentions would have already leaked into the market, leaving them in a worse position. And if the dealer trades in such a circumstance, they may be profiting from their knowledge of the client's intentions. The GFXC's consultation on this issue attracted submissions from a wide range of market participants and industry associations. This included banks and others on the sell side who make use of last look, many from the buy side, as well as platforms and other technology providers. The submissions are all available on the GFXC's website. As expected, a variety of opinions were expressed in the submissions. Most respondents thought that trading during the last look window was inconsistent with good market practice. However, others argued that such trading allowed for tighter pricing and better liquidity provision for clients. In the end, the GFXC's conclusion was that the code's language needed to be strengthened to say that market participants should not undertake trading activity during the last look window, unless there is an explicit understanding between the dealer and the client that A, the trade request will only be accepted if the dealer is first able to offset the risk in the market, and B, all trading volumes that result from this activity in the last look window are fully passed on to the client. Arrangements that might meet this test are often referred to as cover and deal, where the dealer performs a role that is very similar to that of an agent. Of course, in a formal agency arrangement, there will be a very clear understanding between the parties with certain obligations imposed on the agent. For those utilising cover and deal arrangements, the code is seeking to ensure that a similar level of understanding exists between the dealer and their client, one that acknowledges the risks associated with information leakage and precludes the possibility of the dealer profiting from that information by trading in the window and subsequently rejecting the client's trade request. Following its consultation on last look, the GFXC has formed a working group to investigate in more detail the usage and prevalence of cover and deal trading arrangements in the foreign exchange market. But absent such an arrangement, market participants should not be conducting trading activity in the last look window. And the code now also makes it clear that trading activity should be understood to encompass pricing activity as well. This is not to say that price makers can't otherwise continue to trade or update their prices during the last look window. It's just that they should not be allowing any information from the client's trade request to influence their trading activity or their price setting during that time. And to underline that distinction, some additional examples relating to Principle 17 have been appended to the code, one that shows how a market maker can legitimately continue to update their prices during the last look window, and one that illustrates inappropriate usage of the information from a client's trade request to update prices. The GFXC's guidance on last look highlights the importance of price makers being transparent about their trading practices. But it also recognises that we can't solely rely on transparency to safeguard market integrity. Some have argued that so long as price makers are transparent about their practices, clients will be able to make informed choices, lessening the need for any industry-level guidance. In the area of last look, the GFXC did not fully accept that argument. To protect the integrity of the market, it's not enough that the dealer simply discloses what they are doing. The disclosed arrangement must provide for all trading activity in the last look window to be passed on to the client. There are other areas of market practice where the Global Code is clear that transparency on its own is not sufficient. Principle 11, for example, talks about pre-hedging, which is the management of risk associated with anticipated orders. And while transparency is also an important part of this guidance, with the code saying the market participants should communicate their pre-hedging practices to their clients, that principle goes further by also saying something about how pre-hedging should be undertaken, namely with due regard to prevailing market conditions, and that it should be designed to benefit the client. There's another equally important limitation with transparency that goes beyond issues of trading in the last look window or pre-hedging anticipated orders, and that is how clients can actually obtain an adequate understanding of their counterparts' trading practices. Banks, along with some other liquidity providers, publish disclosure statements, and under the impetus of the code, these statements now generally have much more detail than before. And while this is undoubtedly a good thing, how confident should we be about the effectiveness of this approach? And this isn't just about whether the disclosures provide the right sort of detail or whether they are comprehensible to the client. As many respondents to the GFXC's consultation on Last Look pointed out, in much of the trading on electronic platforms, the intermediation of a prime broker can mean that the client does not know the identity of the liquidity provider. So whose responsibility is it to provide the necessary disclosures in those instances, and how can it be done? The GFXC is very conscious of this issue and the implications it has for the transparency of the market. A separate working group on disclosures has been formed to consider the way forward. Finally, the GFXC has also established a working group to draft additional examples on Principle 11 that could be added to the code. Specifically, that group is tasked with providing examples of inappropriate pre-hedging practices. I should note that in keeping with the earlier approach to drafting the code, each of these working groups draws on a wide range of market participants and includes both private and public sector members. Well, I hope that gives you some flavour of what the GFXC is working on and how important it is to have a global body seeking to establish principles of good practice. The working groups, along with the earlier consultation on Last Look, illustrate a commitment from the GFXC to ensure that the code is a living document and that it will keep pace with an evolving market. To conclude then, I'd just say that the signs are very promising that the code is becoming embedded within the industry. I'd once again encourage you all to be part of that. The widespread adoption of a global code will be of benefit to everyone in the industry, regardless of what side of the market they're on. So thanks for your attention. I'm happy to take a couple of questions if someone has them.
We have some questions on
slide. The code is certainly relevant to the buy side. As mentioned, there are some direct principles which directly speak to them. As well at a higher level, the high-level principles on ethics and governance would be relevant to everyone. With the specific question you asked, there's a principle, I don't have the code in me, which speaks to partly to that issue of communicating whether or not it is the full size, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Any more questions? Don't be shy. I have one more question.
Sure.
If a bank signs up, a global bank signs a statement of commitment, does that cover the prime brokerage side as well?
Well, I mean, that's really a question you'd have to ask them. I mean, different banks have taken different approaches. Some have signed multiple statements of commitment for different parts of the business. Because essentially what you find is that the statement of commitment will be signed by the executive or the most senior person responsible for the FX activities, and so depending how they've thought about it, which arms of the business are involved, then they can take different approaches. That's something that's well worth clarifying with those banks if it's not clear from what statements of commitment are in the public domain.
We have one more question on Slido. The AFXC is dominated by sell-side participants. Why is that?
Well, it's certainly true that historically all these FX committees, not just in Australia but globally, were, you know, largely made up of sell-side participants. But as mentioned, we've consciously tried to move away from that in recent years. We've brought in more and more buy-side participants, we've got platforms, et cetera, et cetera. So I wouldn't say it's dominated by them anymore, but, I mean, obviously they're the largest grouping and no doubt always perhaps will be, but it is something we're very conscious of. But at the GFXC, I mean, the approach it's taken to drafting the code and in these working groups, again, I mean, those working groups certainly, they're not dominated by the sell side or anything like that. There's very conscious effort to drag in people from the buy side as well as platforms and the like.
Any more questions?
Thank you. I just have one quick question. I've realized there are two different versions with the code. There's a May version and a December version.
Yep.
Just wanted to understand what the biggest difference would be between the two versions and which one we are expected to adopt.
Use the December. The May version, it's archived on the GFXE website. And I assume all previous versions of the code will be archived in the same way. But, yeah, certainly the current version of the code is the December version, and that was what was published after the GFXC finalised its response to the consultation on Last Look, which took place in the second half of last year. So, again, whether the current working groups or anything else that GFXC is doing see prompt future revisions to the code, it'll follow the same process. But, yeah.
Thank you.
Probably as long as a piece of string. Well, that's something well worth discussing. That clients should be discussing with their banks who are using Last Look as to how long it is and what's happening during that window.
One more. We had one more coming in. Is ASIC part of the AFXC?
No, they're not. No, but we keep them informed of what's going on. I mean, the AFXC itself is quite transparent. You know, we publish our agendas in advance and minutes, et cetera, et cetera, and ASIC from time to time will, on invitation, come along if, they've got something to say or people want to hear from them, but no, they're not formally part of the AFXC.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please join me in thanking Matthew for this presentation.